The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Tuesday, March 8th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We're real glad you could join us for this fantastic Tuesday. We got all sorts of good stuff coming up on today's show. And of course, joining us here in the studio is our co-pilot and engineer, Ganja John. How you doing, John?
I'm doing excellent. How are you doing,
Lee? Oh, doing good. I don't know why you've got a hat on that is promoting tuberculosis. I think that's awful, John.
It's awful. It really is.
How could you do such a
thing?
Actually,
I walked through the Tampa Bay Airport. For you guys that don't know, it's the Tampa Bay, what are they, the Devil Rays?
Yeah,
Devil Rays hat. I was walking through the Tampa Bay Airport right after my transplant with a mask on and this hat on.
The TV hat?
Yeah.
Very nice, very nice. Also joining us from our virtual studio in Grastoria, Oregon, is the lovely Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, guys.
Glad to have you here, Carrie. How are things in Astoria?
Oh, things are great here. You know, I think this is the first day this year I haven't turned my heat on yet, so things are looking up.
Oh, yeah. The springtime is coming here in the Pacific Northwest. We're looking forward to it. Hey, folks, on today's show, it's Electric Tuesday, so we'll be going across the pond with Cannabis Cure UK. He's got some music. John Digweed coming up here later in our little electronica music for the day. And then at half past, we've got a great interview coming up with Dr. Harry Levine from Queens College in New York. And he's a leading sociologist and researcher on the racial disparity in marijuana policing and arrests and convictions in America. We've had him on the show before discussing the results that he found from his studies in New York City, the arrest capital of the United States, 50,000 arrests last year in New York alone. This time he's going to come and tell us a little bit about Philly and what he's found in California and some further drill down into that data. It's very fascinating. It's something we definitely have to take a look at in the reform community, the racial disparities in this drug law enforcement. And then a radical rant at the end of the show, something I kind of mused on a little bit yesterday in hour two that's kind of coalesced into a rant that I just got to get off my chest. It's in defense of Tiger Blood. That's right, I'm going to talk about Charlie Sheen and what he has to do with our issue of marijuana law reform. But before we get to all that, we do our hemp headlines with Cannabis Carrie. So what's in the news today?
Well, in the news today, we're going to follow up on a favorite here on the stash. We're going to see what Tommy Chong is up to up north. Hmm. Also, L.A. has an election today, so L.A. voters are expected to get out to the polls, hopefully in record numbers. And also, a disturbing policy that has surfaced from CBS News about the ATF and their gun policy with Mexico.
Okay, we'll look forward to that right after this first break. We encourage everyone to check out our sponsors and pay attention to the ads so you can know what's happening. We got all sorts of great stuff coming up, including the Medical Cannabis Cup in Denver, Colorado, and the Normal National Conference. Information on that coming up here on the show. Stick around. It's Normal Show Live. We're back right after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
U.S. vagina, Malgo. Broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to. Broke down barrier. Boost the economy and. Broke down barrier. It's helping other states. Broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to. Broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice. Broke down barrier. We gonna change the law. Broke down barrier. We got to educate. Broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up USVI normal, working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a non-profit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179. You can also visit our website at www.usvinorml.org.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Normal National Conference 2011, Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd. You'll learn about marijuana law, cannabis science, and the grassroots activism necessary to end prohibition. Set in the Mile High City, America's cannabis capital. Special guests include medical marijuana pioneer and Harvard Emeritus Dr. Lester Grinspoon, U.S. Congressman Jared Polis, and Normal founder Keith Straub. Normal National Conference 2011, coming of age in Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Tommy Chong is an American actor and marijuana enthusiast, but lately he has been doing quite a bit of work in Canadian politics. Half of the American comedy duo Cheech and Chong has been doing fundraisers for NDP leadership candidate Dana Larson. Mr. Larson is the director of the Vancouver Medical Cannabis Dispensary and former leader for the BC Marijuana Party. He switched to the New Democratic Party in 2003, but his commitment to end marijuana prohibition in Canada has never wavered. Chong hosted a campaign fundraiser on Monday night in Vancouver and spoke at length about the U.S. and Canadian fight to legalize cannabis. He feels that Dana Larson's chances at winning the premier of British Columbia Post is excellent, but says that a politician running on a pro-cannabis agenda gives hopes to millions of Canadians, regardless of the election outcome. When someone asked him how closely he has been following the NDP leadership campaign, he responded that it's hard to watch anything in America that doesn't have Charlie Sheen involved, jokingly adding that the trouble with the U.S. is that there is little global news. He pointed out that he will be 73 years old this year, and that is how long pot has been illegal. He says that he hopes it will be legal in his lifetime and that he thinks he was put on earth to get it legal. He told his fans in Vancouver that he spends 4 or 5 months of the year in Vancouver, and that is one of the reasons he's so interested in British Columbian politics.
Wow. It's just amazing the times that we're living in now where we don't have to think about whether the politician, you know, who's the least bad on marijuana policy. Well, this guy wants to lock us all up, but this other guy thinks it should be decrim. Now we're actually got guys that are pro-legalization. We got them in Canada. We got them here in the United States. We're talking about guys like Jared Polis and Barney Frank and Ron Paul, all sorts of politicians, like Gary Johnson, the governor there, all sorts of politicians in the U.S. and now, you know, Dana Larson in Canada and others, you know, far too many to mention, who are now pro-marijuana legalization. And to embrace a comedian like Tommy Chong, someone who, you know, not just 20 years ago in my lifetime, you know, 10, even 15 years ago, was being derided by our government in reference to medical marijuana. You know, Barry McCaffrey calling it Cheech and Chong medicine, right? It was a way of disparaging the movement. Now, it looks as though these politicians are welcoming the celebrity of Tommy Chong and people like him, and welcoming the money and the interest and the young voters that this issue brings up. It's a great time to be alive. It's a great time to get involved with politics and marijuana law reform. If you're interested, check out normal.org and send me an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll get you hooked up with your own local Normal chapter.
Los Angelinos are voting today on a measure that would increase taxes on medical marijuana by 5% above the nearly 10% in sales tax that the patients already pay. Measure M, the Marijuana Extra Tax Ordinance, will increase the cost of the already expensive medical marijuana in LA shops. Medical marijuana advocates have come out hard in opposition to the measure and have mounted a campaign to let voters know that the city needs to find other sources of revenue than a tax burden from sick people. Don Duncan, the director of California's Americans for Safe Access, one of the advocate groups in strong opposition to Measure M, says that LA prices for medical marijuana have already excluded many of patients and that it doesn't make sense for the city to charge the most vulnerable people for treatment. The supporters of Measure M in Los Angeles say that the city needs more money to implement regulations in order to license medical marijuana distribution centers. Patient advocate groups argue that cost recovery provisions already exist in LA's medical marijuana ordinance and that additional costs can be recouped with licensing fees that are not linked to the amount of medical marijuana sold. Measure M supporters say the measure is needed because medical marijuana distributors in LA don't currently pay business license fees, but in other businesses in LA, typical city business licenses fees range from 0.1% to 0.5% of a company's sales. That's at least 10 times less than a 5% tax. Duncan says that medical marijuana providers are willing to pay their fair share, but that it must be fair, and that asking for the medical marijuana businesses to pay up should come with the responsibility of the city to protect and stop attacking the city's dispensaries and collectives. Los Angeles is still working to fix their broken city ordinance to regulate the medical marijuana market, a source of frustration and embarrassment after the city council took years to implement a regulation ordinance, only to see it losing ground in Superior Court. Much of the strong opposition to medical marijuana in LA is from the police chief of the city, Charlie Beck, and the district attorney, Steve Cooley, who have fought hard against allowing dispensed medical marijuana in the city at all under the arguments that its sale is illegal under state law. But with the thousands of medical marijuana patients in Los Angeles and sales of medical cannabis in much of the rest of the state, the city is fighting a battle that it will eventually lose despite the passage of Measure M or not. There are several other measures to vote for Los Angeles residents today, along with several seats on education boards. There are some city council members who have come out in opposition to Measure M and the $50 tax per $1,000 of medical marijuana collectives' gross receipts. The polls open at 7 a.m. this morning, and they will be open until 8 p.m. this evening. And if you live in the L.A. area, you can find your polling place at lavote.net/locator.
All right. LAvote.net/locator. Check that out, Los Angelinos. Get out to vote. You know, on these elections that happen on March, you know, just for the city, not a whole lot of people turn out. So your vote means even that much more. So get out there and vote on these issues. Now, with respect to some of the concerns here, I am sympathetic to the notion that medical marijuana prices are too high in California and Los Angeles, and that has kept some patients unable to get their access that they need. However, that argument can't be made if you didn't support Prop 19 and legalization for everyone. We all know that the only reason medical marijuana prices are so high is because marijuana is still illegal for the healthy people that want to use it. And there's still a criminal risk involved in producing a lot of that marijuana. So we got to go for legalization for everyone if you're really interested about bringing the prices down. And then number two, this idea that, how immoral it is to tax medicine. I'm sympathetic to that argument too, but it's a much easier argument to make in medical marijuana states where people have to document a very serious condition in order to qualify for medical marijuana, unlike California, where it's allowed for just about anything that anyone wants to say, and there's this blurring of the lines between the people who want marijuana and the people who need marijuana. Whenever we make these legalization arguments, I often hear medical proponents saying, yeah, go ahead and tax the hell out of the recreational users, but don't tax the medical users. Well, if that's the idea that you're going to have, and we're going to have people in California who are quite quite obviously recreational users using medical marijuana. Those two, you have to reconcile those two points somehow. Otherwise, though, I'm in general agreement here. We shouldn't be taxing medicine for people, and we should do all we can to reduce the price of marijuana.
A report on CBS News is looking at the origin of assault rifles belonging to Mexican drug cartels. It has long been known that gun shops along the Mexican-U.S. border have been outselling gun shops anywhere else in the U.S. A policy of the alcohol, tobacco, and farms called Project Gunrunner sent teams of ATF agents to the border to help stop the flow of guns across the border. But insiders are now saying that the Gunrunner project has actually facilitated thousands of firearms reach the dangerous drug cartels. Not wanting to be identified for fear of retaliation, six veteran ATF officials spoke to CBS about the dangerous game of gun running. Back in 2009, the ATF got a tip about a suspicious gun purchase in a Phoenix gun shop. There were many buys, and they were all questionable because the buyers always paid in cash. The cash was often brought in paper bags, and the guns purchased were guns of choice for drug cartels, semi-automatic versions of military rifles and handguns. Gun shop owners actually wanted to refuse and stop the suspicious sales, but the ATF encouraged them to continue. For the next year, the ATF sat and watched a suspected drug cartel operative buy thousands of guns, including 575 AK semi-automatic assault rifles. That one case alone saw over 2,500 guns purchased from one gun shop, including some 50 caliber guns that they let walk out of the shop. One frustrated agent said the gun running policy was insane, and he was ordered to sit and watch. And one distraught agent was often overheard on ATF radios begging to intercept the 50 caliber guns he was watching cross the border. His answer came back as negative: stand down. The tactic of letting the guns walk or run in this case was supposedly so ATF officials could find out where they ended up, possibly building a big case against a cartel boss. But of course, in this case, the guns were walking into the hands of criminals who are using them to kill Mexicans, Americans, and tourists who get in the way of drug trafficking. One brave federal agent, John Dodson, did allow himself to be identified by CBS and told them that the agency was intentionally letting guns go down to Mexico. Dodson's bosses say that that never happened, and now he is risking his job to say anything else about the Gunrunner project. Dodson stands strong with his statements, calling himself the boots on the ground in Phoenix, and insisting that his bosses tell him publicly that they didn't order him to let the guns walk, saying that he has been allowing guns to be purchased by suspected drug cartels for the few years that he's been in Phoenix. In one particular case called The Fast and the Furious, surveillance video obtained by CBS shows suspected drug cartel suppliers carrying boxes of weapons to their cars at a Phoenix gun shop. The long boxes shown in the video being loaded were AK-47 type assault rifles. Documents show that those guns that the ATF let go to Mexico began showing up at crime scenes in Mexico by the dozens, and in some cases in shootouts with Mexican officials. The Fast and the Furious group supervisor noted in an email that 958 shootings happened in March of 2010 in Mexico, and in another place in that email said that the subjects they were watching purchased 359 firearms in March alone. Dodson feels that his agency's policy is partly to blame for the escalating violence in Mexico and says he has confronted his supervisors about the policy over and over. The answer, according to him, was, if you're going to make an omelet, you've got to break some eggs. Dodson is speaking out in part because one of his colleagues, Border Patrol agent Brian Terry, was gunned down in December. The gun that killed him was one from the Fast and Furious case that he had been assigned to watch, and two of the guns found at the scene had serial numbers on them that the ATF had on record.
Now, Russ, I grew up in a small town with a lot of gun nuts, and I've owned three AK-47 semi-automatics.
Okay.
A four-year-old child can take that gun apart and clean it.
Yeah.
And without any modifications, just firing that gun with your thumb rather than your trigger finger can completely turn it into an automatic, fully automatic massacre machine. And it's insane that the ATF would let those guns go over the border.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, regardless of where you are, where you stand on issues of guns and whether or not there should be more or less gun control, that's beside the point. We've got laws right now that prevent this from happening, from getting these weapons across the border to these Mexican criminals. And the ATF is ordering their own agents to stand down and not enforce those laws to not stop these guns from getting out. You got to break some eggs eggs to make an omelet? These eggs are human beings, man. We're talking about 34,550 Mexicans that have been killed in the past 4 years, many of them by guns that have been purchased illegally here in the United States. This is just a shocking revelation in this story, and once again shows this the whole ends justify the means mentality of the war on drugs. Rather than pursuing the simplest solution to the problem, recognizing that Americans like to take drugs and we should legalize and regulate those markets, they will try everything instead and ignore the carnage and the death and the destruction that happens in their wake, trying to futilely end the law of supply and demand. It just cannot be done. It's time to come to our senses, recognize the humanity of the people that are dying in Mexico, and come to the logical and humane solution.
Well, now that I'm completely terrified of all the AK-47s on the street, let's take a break.
Yeah, no kidding. A little scary. We got Captain America Bear helping us out. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal National Conference 2011, Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd.
I'm not a crook.
When President Nixon declared war on marijuana smokers, Normal was founded by a young lawyer named Keith Straub. And now, in our 40th year, Normal is coming of age as states begin discussing outright marijuana legalization.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Join us in Denver, Colorado, the day after 420 for our 40th annual National Conference. You'll learn about marijuana law, cannabis science, and the grassroots activism necessary to end prohibition. Set in the Mile High City, America's cannabis capital. Special guests include medical marijuana pioneer and Harvard Emeritus Dr. Lester Grinspoon, U.S. Congressman Jared Polis, and Normal founder Keith Straub. Normal National Conference 2011, coming of age in Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd. It's the true Rocky Mountain High.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you Tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electronic music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and electronica, brought to you by Greg in Surrey, Sussex, England, and Cannabis Cure UK. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Well, we got up on the Skype trying to reach Cannabis Cure in the UK, but no answer from the old chap. But we did get the song uploaded from. We don't know much about it, and I don't know if he's got an intro recorded for it. But what we have from it is that it's by John Digweed, and it's called The Music Remix.
Cannabis. Hey there, Tokers. This is Cannabis Cure UK bringing you Electric Tuesday. This is a remix of a song called Freedom Fighters by a band called The Music. The Music were very popular in the British rock music scene in the early 2000s and are still active today. This remix is by John Digweed. I guess you can see how I came across this track now. I love getting in the groove to this one. I like the original. I play it on my podcast. I'm definitely going to be dancing for the freedom fighters of the world. That's you. Check out the original on my podcast. It's cureuk.podomatic.com. Put it playing in there amongst the UK news. Enjoy the tune. Peace out.
Blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf. I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
High in the Rockies, for the first time ever, High Times is hosting the Medical Cannabis Cup in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. There'll be cultivation seminars with High Times editors Danny Danko and Nico Escondido, plus other experts and cannabis celebrities. Attend activism seminars with leaders of the medical marijuana movement, including advice on how to start your own cannabis business. Meet industry leaders in medical cultivation, hydroponics, smokable glassware, hemp products, dispensary supply, cannabis accessories, and more. Plus, Medical Cannabis Cups will be awarded to the best indica, sativas, concentrates, and edibles entered by legally operating medical marijuana dispensaries and growing collectives. And don't forget Saturday night when the Medical Cannabis Cup will host the extravaganza with surprise musical guests. The High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, April 2nd and 3rd, 2011 at Exto in Denver, Colorado. Visit MedCanCup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis industry. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Denver.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The most devastating effect of the war on marijuana is that it is a war on everyday people like you and me. All week, we speak to the doctors, scientists, celebrities, and politicians who make up the professionals fighting for cannabis liberty. But we never forget about the tens of millions who use cannabis, the millions who need medical access to cannabis, and the hundreds of thousands arrested every year for cannabis, and the tens of thousands imprisoned under our marijuana laws. At Normal, we are the Cannabis Consumers Lobby, and we take this opportunity to share the experience of our cannabis community.
One of the things we've been examining in the cannabis community for quite some time here at Normal Show Live is the racial disparity in the war on drugs, specifically arrests for marijuana, profiling, and the such. And most recently, one of our Normal chapters has been involved in this. In the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, our own Philly Normal, along with Chris Goldstein, Derek Rosenzweig, all the fellas there that are working with Philly Normal, have brought to light some statistics in the city of Brotherly Love that should give pause to anyone who doubts the racist nature of the enforcement of marijuana laws in this country. And the exposure that they gave to this story has led to some changes in the way Philadelphia is handling these cases that has now led to what is essentially a marijuana court, Room 404 of the Criminal Justice Center. And this was profiled in an article in Philadelphia Weekly called Blunt Assessment, The Need for Legal Weed in Philadelphia. Joining us to talk about it is a gentleman, a doctor who's been researching this in New York and gave a lot of research to California during the Prop 19 campaign, Dr. Harry Levine, PhD from Queens College in New York. Thanks for joining us on the show, sir.
It's a pleasure.
So I was telling folks about this new data in Philadelphia, and from what you've learned in Philadelphia, is it about the same as what's going on in New York and L.A. or worse, or how can you characterize this?
It's pretty much the same as what's going on in New York, and if for some people in New York. In Philadelphia, when they stop somebody for a stop and frisk or a traffic stop or any kind of thing, and they search them, they will pat them down, they may ask them to reveal, take what's in their pockets out, or just put their hands in their pockets, most of which is flatly unconstitutional and illegal, but routine among police, especially who are patrolling in primarily black and Latino in low-income neighborhoods, and especially if narcotics police. And then they will arrest people. They will put them in handcuffs, put them in the police car in Philadelphia, as in New York. They take them back to the police station where they take fingerprints and photographs. And I just learned that in New York, they now do eye scans. I'm not sure whether they do that in Philadelphia or not.
Wow.
And that information, it should be understood, is sent first of all to the state capitol, but then to the FBI.
Yeah.
And there are in Philadelphia, they do talk about expunging records, but there's no such thing as expunging records from the FBI. Those stay on file permanently, and furthermore, they're not only in the FBI databases and then go out to databases in other states, and there are commercial firms which get this information as well. So in the day of computerization and electronic transfers and so on, there's really no such thing as expungement or clearing records or anything else. These arrest records, these criminal records, these fingerprint records, these eye scan records, and in some places DNA records are permanent and stay there forever. In Philadelphia, the person, it can take several hours or more for the information to go to the FBI and come back. One of the interesting things about it is that if somebody's been arrested before, it's much quicker. Because they have a name and they have these things on file and they can double check it. But if you're the first time you've ever been arrested, they have to scan in the fingerprints and then check them by some kind of photographic kind of a computer process against other fingerprints, because maybe you're using an alias. So the person who's arrested for the first time can actually wind up spending more time in the holding cell at the local police station than somebody who's been arrested multiple times. In Philadelphia, they are then let go with a ticket or a summons to appear at a certain date, generally at 4 o'clock, to this particular room in the courthouse where they see a judge. Sometimes, apparently, while at the courthouse, they may talk to a prosecutor, assistant district attorney, who's in charge of this and who offers them the right to go to the marijuana only court before they can then plead not guilty and be assigned a court date. But sometimes they just are sent to the court anyway, and when they get to the court, they're asked what it is they want to do. And then they're told they can have this treatment option, which is really a class, apparently. And then they go to this class, and they have to pay money. I'm not quite sure how much the article may say, but I'm not sure what they have to pay. And after completing it, they probably have some kind of probation for a period of time.
Wow.
That's Philadelphia.
Yeah.
In New York, people are held at the police station, and then generally, what they used to do in Philadelphia is they then would take them down to what's called central booking in almost all court and police sort of agencies in America, which is generally the sort of holding cells that are accompanied or attached to or part of a local courthouse. In New York, they tend to be held overnight at the central booking in the general lockup. I just literally talked to somebody today who spent the night in jail. He's in a lockup with 50 people of various kinds of crimes. There's an open toilet. There's no place to really sleep. There's no food that anybody would eat. And then they're sort of spit out into the arraignment court in the morning. And in New York, they're given a kind of year probation. As long as they don't get arrested again, then the charges will be dropped at the end of the year. But they still have an open criminal case. They have a permanent arrest record. The open criminal case can disqualify you for public housing. It can disqualify you for all kinds of jobs. It is easily searchable again through various criminal databases.
Right. And, of course, that's the harm of the marijuana prohibition isn't necessarily being locked up for it. One of their defenses is, you know, nobody's doing real time in prison for just marijuana. But really, it's that arrest that then sets you on a track that's going to keep you in a permanent second-class citizenship.
It can, yes, absolutely. The most serious consequences of a low-level marijuana possession arrest, which is the most common, I think it's 88% of the or something like that, of the national marijuana arrests, or just misdemeanor possession arrests. And in New York City, I'm not sure what the numbers are in Philadelphia, but they're probably close. In New York City, more people, New York City of 8 million people, more people are arrested for possessing small amounts of marijuana than any other crime whatsoever.
Wow.
It's the number one cause of arrest in New York City. One out of every seven arrests for anything in New York City is a marijuana possession arrest.
Yeah, and when you look at the pattern of these arrests happening particularly in the low income and largely minority neighborhoods, you cannot help but start to think that the whole purpose of this has nothing to do with eradicating marijuana or stopping crime. It's simply data mining on the poor and the minority people.
It's absolutely it meets a series of needs and requirements within the police department for different constituencies. The data mining is one really important one to the top brass, to the managers of the police department. There's nothing the police can do. This is not just true in New York. It's true everywhere in America. There's nothing the police can do to get the photographs, fingerprints, and personal information on new people, particularly young people of color, who've never before been in the system than marijuana arrests. So it is the biggest net. It is the net that catches more fish who've never been caught before for anything than anything else. Because almost anybody, if you what is it that a 16, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old is going to be walking around with in a pocket or a backpack or a purse that can get them arrested? Overwhelmingly it's marijuana, and there's hardly almost anything else, a knife occasionally someplace, some other drug, but that's much less common. So marijuana is the excuse to do data mining. But it's only one of the justifications, it's only one of the reasons why the police do so many of these things and like them. For the individual officers in Philadelphia, as in New York, if they make an arrest toward the end of a shift, then they do the booking, they do the fingerprints, they take the photographs, they accompany the person through the whole record taking and booking process, and they can get overtime for that, time and a half. And police pay, and certainly in New York, is at historically low levels, and so this is highly desired by officers, especially young officers, and there's not a lot of other ways they can make overtime. So making these collars toward an end of shift is a way to get overtime. They're safe. They're easy. You're not going to get stabbed or shot. Marijuana arrestees are high-quality arrestees. They're not smelly. They're not dirty. They don't tend not to have HIV or hepatitis or crabs or body lice. They don't smell. When a cop arrests somebody, they are married to that person for several hours in close physical contact. So marijuana arrestees are fairly high up on the food chain of arrestees for somebody to spend a few hours with. For the supervisors in New York, the immediate supervisors of cops who make overtime for these arrests, they make overtime pay. So there's overtime pay that goes around from these things. For the police brass, and it's a way of keeping track of the police of where they are. If they're writing a ticket at 2 o'clock over here, and at 2:20 they did a stop and frisk over here, and at 2:40 they made an arrest over here, we have paperwork showing where they are and what they've been doing. So it allows everybody within the system to show productivity and keep track of what they're about. And then there is this other thing, which is for the top brass of the police department, if you have a bunch of cops out making these low-level stop and frisks and arrests, and these things are often byproducts of stop and frisks, which are heavily focused on low-income black and Latino neighborhoods, then if something big should come up, you have a fire, there's a bombing, the president's in town, there's an emergency of some kind, a water main break, you can pull cops off of these patrols, these stop and frisks, these marijuana patrols, narcotics police, making these low-level arrests, you can pull them over to where you need them for something else. No ongoing investigation is affected. There's no sort of consequence in terms of crime deferring the results of it, and then you can send them, since hardly anybody knows these are going on, you can send the officers back. So it gives the police supervisors and brass a lot of flexibility, allows them to collect information, the cops get overtime, supervisors get overtime, they're easy. It's a win-win-win for many elements within the police department.
Wow. It's just so, the more you peel away on this, the more you realize how many entrenched interests there are involved in marijuana prohibition.
Right.
It's just amazing.
That's right.
Let me play cop advocate here for a second, devil's advocate. One of the things we heard from Giuliani back in the day is about how crime went down so much, and it was this broken windows theory of policing. If we get these low-level, graffiti and vandalism and marijuana crimes, that will lead to better neighborhoods and there'll be less of the high-level violent crime and such. What do you have to say about that?
There's much to say about that, but the most important thing, the whole notion doesn't really hold up. Crime began declining before Giuliani ever took office. Crime began declining in New York State and many places in America in the late 1980s. There is a crime decline, but a felony crime decline, but it's true across the United States, and it probably has more to do with computerization than anything else. Allowing them to keep track of what's going on. But around the marijuana arrest, there's two really strong things to say. First of all, nobody ever, any place, has ever made a case that arresting teenagers and young people with a little bit of pot in their pocket has anything to do with deterring serious and violent crime. Nobody even tries to make the case, other than maybe some sort of talk show host someplace will say it, but nobody has any evidence or any even the pretense of evidence that it's true. And the one study in New York that was done, two University of Chicago economists, a guy named Bernard Harcourt, and he did an article called Reefer Madness, I think that's the title of it. You do a search for Bernard Harcourt, H-A-R-C-O-U-R-T, and Reefer Madness. It's a quite technical article that uses crime data from the NYPD to analyze the effect of the marijuana arrests in particular on serious and violent crime in New York. And what they find is not only does the marijuana arrest correlate in any way, shape, or form with reduction of crime, but they probably increase crime. Why would marijuana arrest increase crime? Well, first of all, when somebody is making a marijuana arrest, they've taken somebody back to the police station, they're off the street. So they're not actually available on patrol or to answer calls or to go for a domestic disturbance or anything else. They're back in the police station filling out forms or accompanying somebody down to the central booking. And then the second thing about the arrest is that it distracts them. If somebody's running around looking for low-level offenders and teenagers and so on, they're not actually paying attention to more serious kinds of things that could be going on, like somebody stealing a car. So the whole idea that this has anything to do with reducing crime, and the police officers that we've talked to in the various circumstances will all say the same thing, which is they all, if you ask them about the marijuana arrests and crime fighting and so on, they sort of will tell you what they have to say, and then they will also sigh and breathe out and say, it's a waste of time. It's a fucking waste of time.
Oh, wow. Dr. Harry Levine, PhD from Queens College, New York, one of the leading researchers bringing this to light, and we're going to keep hammering away at this until we end this stupid marijuana prohibition. Thanks for helping us do it and giving us such great data to work with.
It's a pleasure. You go, man.
All right, thanks so much. When we get back, in defense of Tiger Blood, my rant on Charlie Sheen next on Normal Show Live.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is a entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. At Normal, we've been prepping for this debate for 40 years.
Do you really want to legalize marijuana? Prove it.
Join Normal today at NORML.org. And your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the Cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they keep no malice.
The healing of marijuana.
Come on, come on, come on, say.
Free the marijuana.
Hear me say.
Free the marijuana.
Come on, come on, come on, say.
Free the marijuana.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
I've been thinking about this for the past week or so since Charlie Sheen has blown up on Twitter and become all the rage. He's now got only over 2 million followers on Twitter. He did a Ustream show and got 100 million views. So, you know, I'm of course in awe with my 2,300 followers and just topped a million views in 14 months here on the show. So, of course, I'm in awe that Charlie Sheen is winning. And it's been interesting watching the media discussions of this and just the general public's discussion of this. Some people saying, you know, Charlie Sheen's a train wreck. Of course, he just got fired from his show, Two and a Half Men with CBS. But I wanted to come out here in defense of Tiger Blood. And this is kind of a serious thing to me because I really believe that in this country, we have gotten into this paradigm of believing that rehab, some sort of drug rehab, is the cure-all for people who may have gotten into problems with drugs. And I think we've also gotten into this idea that drug use is just inherently bad. I'm going to tell you a few secrets here, folks. There are a lot of people who do drugs, and I'm not talking just cannabis, but do drugs, cocaine, heroin, meth, ecstasy, LSD, who do them recreationally and do not have a problem. It's true. Not everyone who does drugs is a drug abuser. I have friends that I know who are recreational meth users. Every now and then, every 18 months or so, they'll go on a tweak bend and just, you know, be up for 5 days geeking out, and then they're back to real life, and then they're back to doing their jobs. I have friends I know who have used cocaine on numerous occasions and had fun doing the cocaine, and then went back to work the next week and just live their regular lives. I even know people who are friends with heroin addicts who are functional, who have jobs, who have lives that they live, and they will admit that they have to have their heroin, they're addicted to it, but they manage to function and live their lives. And what I'm afraid of here in this country, and especially with respect to marijuana, is that we've come to this idea that that marijuana use is bad, that using cannabis is bad, people caught with it should do rehab. It's a play that we've seen played out many times in the media landscape. You know, of course, we can go to Michael Phelps. You know, Michael Phelps wins 8 gold medals, gets caught smoking a bong, and has to come out and do this huge mea culpa and gets dropped by Kellogg's and all of this. And we've seen it with numerous sports stars that get busted. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll go to rehab. I'll get treatment. And nobody ever stands up and just says, you know what? No, I liked smoking weed. I just won 8 gold medals. I mean, my life seems to be in order. I seem to be handling my responsibilities just fine. Leave me alone. And that's part of what I think is driving this Charlie Sheen phenomenon, is that there's a large segment of people who have gotten tired of the same old, mistakes were made, I'm going to rehab line that we see all the time. And here's someone who's just looked at his life and said, you know what, I like my life, I like what I'm doing. Other people may think it's out of control, a little bit wacky, but it's working for me. Now, this is not to justify any of the things Charlie Sheen has done. I've said this before, you know, domestic violence and getting violent is something I do not tolerate whatsoever. But let's look at things from Charlie Sheen's perspective for a second. You know, he's been working all his life, been in major films that won major awards. He's gotten millions of dollars per episode of the TV shows he's been on. I'm sure he's doing fine as far as bankroll goes. If he got fired from Warner Brothers, so what? He's probably got plenty of money to be living in retirement for the rest of his life, having fun with porn stars, blowing 7-gram rocks, and hanging out at the Sober Valley Lodge. And what's the problem with that? In America, I believe that we need to have freedom in this country, and part of that freedom is accepting that some people will do drugs and may ruin their lives by doing so. But we are not at all entitled as a society to compel people to stop using drugs. Let me repeat that. I do not believe in a free society we have the right to compel people to stop using drugs. Rehab needs to be a choice in this country and not a sentence. We see this with the drug sentencing that we see these drug courts. This is the new thing, not so new, but the new mantra of the Obama administration is treatment, not jail. You know, we're going to send people to treatment. Well, you know, it's just a gilded cage, right? If you're forced to have to go there, you're just having to go into another type of cage. Rehab is for people who realize they have a problem and want to change. It's the old joke of the psychologist. How many psychologists take to change a light bulb? One, but the bulb has to want to change. And by doing this mandatory sentencing into drug rehabs for people who are caught with a baggie of weed or other drugs in some circumstances, is just another form of incarceration. And having a drug or doing a drug in and of itself is not criminal. It is not immoral. Now, if someone does drugs and commits a crime, beats up a girlfriend, trashes a hotel room, for example, or, you know, drives a car, wrecks a car, behaves inappropriately, causes problems, then someone can be punished for their actions. Then someone can be punished for their crimes. But if someone just happens to like to blow 7-gram rocks in his own Malibu mansion, where he can be behind closed doors and not harming anyone, making videos on Ustream, let's let him. Go ahead, man. It is your life. It is your life to live. If a man has a right to go to heaven in the way of his own choosing, he has a right to go to hell in the manner of his own choosing. I believe Hugh Hefner said that. I'm not exactly sure. I'll probably stole that quote from somewhere. But the point is, this is part of why the Charlie Sheen phenomenon is so taking America by storm. Really, what evidence does Charlie Sheen have to indicate that he's not winning? You know, they've continued to pay him. They continue to give him money. He continues to get away with things that if his name were Tyrone Washington, he'd be in prison right now for. So from Charlie Sheen's perspective, of course he believes he's winning. And then for the people who, like me, are enjoying watching Charlie Sheen and getting involved with this and do the little tisk tisk and cluck cluck and shaking their fingers like, oh, how terrible, enabling the addict and enabling it. The man is choosing to go the direction he wishes to go. And he is living his life as a public entertainer. And he knows, regardless if he's having problems or whatever you want to judge it or characterize it as, he is choosing to do so. He's choosing to be in the public spotlight. We are not chasing after him with paparazzi. Well, I mean, paparazzi do chase after him, I'm sure. But those of us who are enjoying this are enjoying what he's giving through Twitter, what he's giving through Ustream. This is not taking advantage of someone when they themselves wish to broadcast it. So let's, in this country, recognize that freedom is messy sometimes. That freedom means tolerating some things and choices by people that we ourselves may not agree with. And that it means that some people who might be more famous or in positions we might call role models will make mistakes and do things that we may not approve of. But that's what freedom is all about. And to make the judgment that any use of a drug is something that must be stopped at all costs is dangerous to our democracy and is dangerous to our civil liberties. Again, most people who use drugs do not have an addiction problem with them. Most people, we accept readily the use of alcohol in the society, for which the addiction rates and the harm to society can be shown to be much greater than any or all of the illegal drugs combined. We readily accept that. We do not characterize people who like to drink as somehow having a moral failing or as somehow committing some sort of crime. We recognize that people that get way drunk and are publicly belligerent or violent or drive their cars, we recognize those are crimes. We recognize that a certain subset of people can become alcoholics and that this can be problematic for them. And we offer them AA and we offer them treatment. But if we can accept that in our society, if we can accept the most dangerous drug, alcohol, There's no reason for us to be demonizing the people who are using the other drugs. And if Charlie Sheen wants to live a rock star life from Mars and be a warlock with F-14 poetry coming out of his fingertips, by God, I'm going to be there enjoying it too. Winning, duh. Thanks for joining us here at Normal Show Live. I'm Radical Russ. For Ganja John and Cannabis Carrie, we will be back tomorrow with another podcast. For those of you listening live, stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Got some more news, a story out of New York I just got to talk about, and we'll take a look at some other stuff and listen to some great music, too. Stick around. It's Toker Talk Radio, plus your calls at 971-533-7111. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.